Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Good evening, everybody. And in our very popular Thursday slot, we have the brand father, Jeremy Sampson. Welcome, Jeremy, and thanks for making time with us yet again.
Dawn, always good to be with you, and I hope all is well with you.
You know, you sent me a whole long list of things that we can discuss. Unfortunately, we only have sort of 10, 11, 12 minutes or so. But the one that really caught my eye is Eskom, right? How can they possibly be making a profit?
Well, I think you need to ask them, because this is the press release that's gone out. This is what the media is saying. This is what the CEO is saying. And I would have thought that I'm no economist, as you well know, that technically Eskom is bankrupt. It has been bankrupt for a long time. It is owed billions of money. And why is it still supplying electricity to people when it's still owed billions? And yet here we are told it's, you know, on a profit. And, you know, how much of our money, and I say our money because we, the taxpayers, as Margaret Thatcher once famously said, the only money government has got to spend is the money the taxpayers have given them to spend on their behalf. Well, the money has been shoveled down Eskom's throat, and now they're saying, oh, we've made a profit, the first time in years. Well, what absolute, utter nonsense. And, you know, earlier today I was watching, I think it was Bloomberg, where they were talking about, you know, the potential of a bubble on the stock exchanges, who to invest in. And they said the sector to invest in at the moment is the electricity generating companies in the United States. Well, that's the exact opposite to what Eskom is for us. Who would invest in it? No one. Absolutely no one.
Yes, of course, the reason why the energy producing companies in America are so popular is because of all of those data centers that are growing.
Exactly.
And for AI, and you know, it's a sort of almost insatiable demand for electricity. In fact, one of the things that I'm going to be talking about in my newsletter that goes next week is, you know, the fact that coal is now back on the agenda, not because it's particularly friendly or that Trump likes it, is that they need electricity from any source, anything.
Absolutely.
They can get their hands on. And if that's coal, then that's fine. Yeah, it's a really interesting sort of scenario. But, you know, I think I saw something on Eskom today that the average salary at Eskom is R1 million a year.
Well, the last time I walked in there, I was actually shocked to see how people were almost walking around as though it was a public holiday. There was no urgency. Everyone was having food to eat, wandering around, chatting, no urgency at all. And I was told that amongst the black community, sorry, I've got to put it that way, one of the aims, if you want a nice, cushy job with lots of perks, go and work for Eskom. And that has been on the table now for a long, long time. You know, often there are these awards functions of which is the top brand for as an employer, for community or whatever. And in those stakes, Eskom always does incredibly well. And you can see why, because they've been carrying on like this now for decades. You know, wearing another hat back at the turn of the century, we were involved in doing a brand valuation for Eskom. And so I'm going back probably 27, 28 years. And in those days, Eskom was the second cheapest producer of electricity in the world. It was one of the top ranked electricity producers in the world. And it was very interesting that they had a basket of top companies in those days, like the GEs and the GMs and people like that, which they managed themselves against to make sure they kept that quality. And look how it slipped back in the last three decades. It really is diabolical.
I suppose that the only light at the end of the tunnel is the fact that there is actually light, that we haven't had load shedding for, what is it, coming on a year now?
You're right, but then there's the other side of the coin, that where, as with most things in this country, especially water as well, there's been a lack of investment, a lack of maintenance. Certainly where I live in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg, there, I know there's a lot of pilferage and stealing, which is absolutely terrible, but also things are blowing up, things aren't working, things are breaking down. And, you know, with water, we know that's one of the main issues. You know, when one of the ministers, whoever it was, says there's a lack of communication, well, that's absolute balderdash. No, it's not lack of communication, it's lack of investment. We've all been paying our bills, haven't we?
Yeah.
All the money's gone into the various segments, whether it's the city or whatever, and that money has not been spent on looking after our needs for the future. That's why water is in such a terrible, terrible pickle now. But no one is saying, where's the money gone? Who's siphoned it off? And where's it been taken? Because the maintenance issue now is going to cripple Johannesburg unless there's more action. And don't hold your breath.
Jeremy, didn't I see something last week that said that in Johannesburg they'd identified 2 billion, or maybe was it 20 billion, water money that had gone sort of allocated elsewhere?
Well, I think you're right. But, you know, this is where last week we were spoiled for choice. You know, whether it was water, a couple of billion had gone away. Whether it was money for Tembisa the hospital was another couple of billion away. You know, I'm afraid you can't count it on one or even two hands. And where's the accountability?
Yeah. As I said to you just before we came on, let's just enjoy the sunshine here in the south, shall we?
Well, after the rain we had last week, the garden smells beautiful.
Yes, yes, it does. So let's sort of stay half in South Africa and half in the US. Mr. Musk has been busy in Memphis.
He has indeed. And, you know, very close to where Elvis Presley had his home. And I was lucky enough to be there about 18 months ago, so I can visualize it. Bought up 140 acres, and he's doing this himself through his companies, not through anyone else. 140 acres, putting in a power-generating plant. Don't ask me what kind he's putting in, but he's doing it. He's getting on with it. It's going to produce a gigawatt of power and electricity, which would be enough to keep going 800,000 households.
Wow.
Now, he's doing this as a person or as a company, but exactly to your point that you've just made, with all the data centers, with all the things going on, now, it is estimated that the consumption of electricity in the States is going to double by 2030. Now, that's less than 5 years away, and it's going to double. And, you know, with all these data centers going up, et cetera, here is Elon Musk getting on with it and doing it as a person. Now, I know people laugh at him and make cracks about him, and sometimes he really does lay himself open to that. But you've got to take your hat off to him. He's a brilliant, brilliant man. And if only we'd have an action man like him with deep pockets doing things in this country, and to hell with government, he would make things happen and we'd all be better off for it.
I couldn't agree more, Jeremy. And talking of energy, maybe Mr. Trump, the Don Quixote of American politics, will soften his stance.
I like that.
Soften his stance towards windmills. I was actually doing a bit of research this morning, you know, and he goes on about how many birds that windmills kill. And I actually researched, and it's probably about a billion birds a year. But cats, domestic cats in the U.S., kill 20 billion birds a year. So if I was an American cat, I'd hide.
Thank you for that piece of information. I really must make sure I don't forget that.
So, I mean, gold is obviously the one sort of bright light on the horizon. I mean, it's been driving our JSE. Our JSE has really benefited from that. And, you know, obviously behind the sort of gold boom at the moment is the fact that central banks are buying up gold because they think, you know, the dollar's, you know, a little bit dodgy. So what are your feelings on gold? Are you a gold bug, Jeremy?
You know, I find it fascinating that, you know, what is it now, over $4,000 an ounce. And for a long, long time, you know this better than me, it was in the doldrums. I know in South Africa there are some gold bugs who, whether you buy shares or whether you buy Krugerrands or whatever, but you know, the fact of the matter is that go back, 20, 30 years, South Africa was the main producer in the world of gold. Today, we've dropped out of the top 10. And I see Mr. Duncan Warmblad, to those of you who don't know, he's the new CEO of Anglo American, saying that this government, over the last couple of decades, has basically decimated the South African mining industry. Mm-hmm. So we're not taking advantage of the booms that we have in various metals, whether it's chrome or copper, whatever. We're not benefiting from gold at the moment, which I think is incredibly sad.
Yeah.
But would you invest today? You know, people say, well, you better get on the train, but I know you'll be saying, well, you can't guess the market. Has it got a long way to go? Again, watching some of the business programs, There are some naysayers in there who are saying, you know, it's getting too frothy, we've got a bubble, da-da-da-da. Then there are others saying, hey, you know, don't miss the boat. We've got another 30-40% to go before the end of 2026. So it's the fear and greed game, I'm sure, which is very much where people need to listen more and more to your weekly newsletters.
Yeah. Well, you know, talking of AI and whether or not it's in a bubble, it's something that we actually discussed in our podcast last week. And where the similarities are with the dot-com crisis, because obviously one was tech, the other is tech. And one of the sort of big takeaways from it is that what we're seeing at the moment, and yes, it is frothy, and you know, yes, it is, you know, there's a lot of exuberance in there, just as there was a lot of exuberance in the dot-com. But there's not sort of a fundamental growing economic problem as there was in 2008, when you had this fundamental problem of, quite frankly, bad credit being bundled together by these, you know, men in gray suits at the banks and sold off as triple-A rated bonds and caused a credit crisis. I mean, that was a fundamental economic problem. The similarities that we have with the dot-com crisis are the fact that valuations are very high. But there's a big difference between what's happening now and what's happening then, is that then the valuations were based on vapor, on expectations. None of these companies were producing any profits. And that's not what we're seeing now. That big, you know, the Mag 7, they've got very good free cash flow. They've been funding all this capex for AI out of cash. They've not been taking on debt in order to do it, which is what happened in the dot-com era. And some of those PE valuations during the dot-com era were absolutely sky high. And although, yes, some of them are quite high now, especially in the sort of, not so much the Mag 7, but, you know, maybe some of these wannabe unicorns that are up and coming, you know, some of their valuations like Palantir and these kinds of things are really quite rich. But there might be some wind in it. I don't know. It's time to be diversified, Jeremy. Let's diversify.
Well, people say diversify, and that's where they need your expertise, because when you actually look at the various stock exchanges, you only have, what, 7 or 8 stocks, which a lot of people seem to say is that's over 50, 60% of the market cap of an entire exchange. Now, I think just this morning, because I think Trump or someone has said, oh, NVIDIA, you can start exporting to the UAE, NVIDIA share price just this morning in the first couple of hours of trading has gone up 3%. And this is the thing, that if you don't go into the market, are you going to miss out big time? What are some of the markets this year have gone up 30% already this year? No, which is incredible. And then you have the local banker saying, oh, we can give you 6.5, 7, 8%. Oh, 8%, Mr. Sampson. No, that's very good. No, it's going to beat inflation. And I'm saying, hey, guys, no, the rest of the world is looking at 20% plus plus.
Yeah, you know, but what goes up also comes down, Jeremy. But one of the problems, particularly for individual investors, you know, we professional investors and professional asset managers don't have that problem, is asset concentration. And this is what you were talking about. You've got these 7 companies that own a lion's share of the thing, and you watch them go up, you watch them double and triple over a short period of time. And, you know, your exposure might have started off at 5%. But now it's at 10, 15%, and you're ending up with asset concentration. And when you get asset concentration, then when it turns, and they always turn, Jeremy, they always turn, you know, not catastrophically, but when they turn, then you're going to see, you know, triple the exposure you thought you had. That's the problem. And it's just emotionally so difficult to sell a winner.
Well, and I think this is where a lot of the man in the street, if I can put it that way, have had such a good run the last few years. They're getting more and more cocky, they're getting more greedy, and as everyone knows, it's more difficult to sell than it is to buy. Whereas if you have a correction, and you're always going to have a correction, no one knows when it's coming, but it'll come, that's when the professionals and people like yourself earn their money, don't they? Because you can look after things. I remember one very famous private banker last year was saying, we might not make you too much money this year, but we'll make sure you don't lose money, because already people were talking about it being frothy. Is there an investment banker, an investment guy who's often on the business news from New York, I think it's Steve Ive, who says, guys, it's popcorn time, and popcorn time is going on, and we're going to still enjoy our popcorn way into next year. Well, there are some people saying, hey, be careful. No, eyes wide open.
I think, you know, just in a quick ending story here, so when you're investing and, you know, you're prudent and you try and get out, not, you're never going to get out at, right at the top of the market, but if you take some of those profits and keep it as cash, when this crashes, you can go and pick up quality stocks on sale. It's like an Edgar's Red Hanger sale.
To all listeners out there, there's some good free advice for you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jeremy. That was the brand father, Jeremy Sampson, talking to us in his popular Thursday slot.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.